Welcome to the Journal Podcast. I'm Ariane Shepherd, PR Executive for the Chartered Insurance Institute. In this episode, I'll be talking to Debbie Gurley and Richard Talbot Jones. In this episode of the podcast, we are discussing the value of chartered status for firms. I'm joined by Richard Talbot Jones, Managing Director at Talbot Jones Limited, and Debbie Gurley, Commercial Underwriting Director at Covéa Insurance. Here is my conversation with Debbie and Richard. Hi, Richard and Debbie. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Afternoon. Hello. Welcome to be here.
Happy to have you guys. So to start, Debbie, could you tell us why your firm became chartered and how long you have held the chartered title?
We became chartered 8 years ago, primarily to support our staff in their professional development, but also to demonstrate to our customers that they can expect the highest quality of service, ethical practice and technical standards from us.
Amazing. Yeah, that sounds great. And Richard, what does having the chartered title mean to the business from both the director and the employee point of view?
This is an interesting question. Being chartered, I think, is about differentiating ourselves from our competitors. I mean, obviously, it would be lovely at some point in the future if brokers were chartered as standard. It seems weird when I speak to friends from other industries, they don't really understand how you can be a broker but not be qualified. So I suppose ideally it would be great if all firms were chartered. But until then, we particularly value the fact that we stand out from the crowd. And we don't really market ourselves based on the sort of lowest, offering the lowest possible premiums to clients. You know, it's not like we charge them a fortune. You know, we may be cheaper, but it's not part of the conversation generally. And I think being chartered supports that part of the conversation because we're saying we are qualified, we are engaging in continuing professional development. In an industry where we're sort of engaged for our brains, you know, we're trying to sort of feed our brains and grow our capability. So being chartered, I think, shows our clients that we are committed to learning and developing. We're not standing still, and it's about value, not cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you be able to speak about what the perceptions from your customers are when it comes to dealing with a chartered firm? Have you had any experiences around that?
Yeah, so I've had some interesting feedback. I mean, as I say, for a lot of people, they just think it's normal. And then when we say we're one of only three chartered firms in the region, they're like, what? How is that possible? But I think some people expect us to be very, very posh and very, very expensive, and then they find out that we're really not. So I think there's an expectation that we will perhaps offering a premium service, but at a premium price, and then they're pleasantly surprised when we're just normal people offering sort of, you know, a good service at a reasonable cost. You know, aside from that, I think the bulk of clients, potential clients, they assume that we're knowledgeable. They assume that we are ethical and sustainable. Lots of things that we don't actually claim to be. We would like to think that we are, but we don't actually claim it. But I think having that sort of, you know, that title of being chartered creates some certain expectations in people's minds when they speak to us.
Yeah. What about you, Debbie? Have you had any similar or different experiences with regards to the customer perceptions?
Yeah, I guess from, you know, just following on from Richard's point of view, I think it's important understanding the perception in the market about the number of companies that are chartered. It should be a standard. Every company should be it. Every broker should be it. I think customers are in the space that they expect that level of professionalism and expertise, and they want the confidence from it. From our perspective, 99% of our customer-facing staff are CII members. We also incorporate all the CIISS and technical training into our core technical capabilities. And that, in our viewpoint, provides us with the trust that our customers can expect us to entrust us to deliver the quality and the technical knowledge that they require and expect from a chartered or even an insurer, especially a chartered one. And I would say that that is demonstrated by the industry awards that the brokers vote for. Covey has received a number of them. In fact, we're shortlisted for 5 of the British Insurance Awards this year. So there's an expectation, I think, from our customers that they can trust that quality of service and ethics and technical expertise that they should be getting from every insurer.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as part of being chartered, firms do have certain responsibilities to fulfil in terms of equality, diversity and inclusion, as well as things like corporate social responsibility. Would you be able to tell us what your firms do in this space? Richard, maybe if we start with you.
So we're a very small firm. There's only about half a dozen of us in the business. So we don't have a formal program or policy or approach to these sorts of things. Just sort of taking them one by one, in terms of equality, diversity, inclusion, we did, when we first launched, we went through an accreditation process to achieve the equality standard, which was good and helpful and useful. It was more a case, though, of that was sort of setting us up for future growth. I mean, we have quite a diverse group for all that it's very small. You know, we've got a mixture of genders and abilities and backgrounds and ethnicities. We're 50% women owned. You know, so it always feels a bit weird as a small business sort of talking about equality and diversity, because it's not like a big pool. There's not the large numbers or the big data to sort of to talk about it, really. I think in terms of corporate social responsibility, we're maybe a little bit more active. We don't have a CSR policy, partly because we're a third sector insurance specialist. So most of our clients are third sector organisations, and corporate social responsibility is often shorthand for giving some time or some money to charity. Obviously, it goes beyond that. There are things around, say, sustainability and, you know, environmental factors and being a good corporate citizen. You know, it's a much broader topic than a lot of people often think. But we do engage with community organisations. As a small broker based in the middle of a town, inevitably, we're going to look to support local causes. Most of our staff are volunteers with one charity or another, or they're trustee of a charity. We have policies that allow for additional leave to help with scout camps, cadet camps, training, these sorts of things. From a sustainability perspective, we're pretty much paperless. We haven't really looked at accreditations in this space because I think there are so many, it's often quite confusing as to what's worth doing. But also, I think because it means different things to different people, if we were to use that as a marketing tool, then how would we pick which one to take? Being a chartered firm, we're holding ourselves to a higher standard. So where we can get accreditations and, you know, that rubber stamping from a third party, then we'll look at that. But also actually embedding the values within the business as part of the corporate culture is the bigger challenge.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Richard. Debbie, would we be able to ask you the same question?
Sure. Covea, similar to a lot of, I would imagine, other insurers, we have a number of policies that support the corporate and social responsibility, diversity, inclusion. We have policies for all them. But over and above them, we're extremely active in that space. Similar to, as Richard said, we're a relatively smaller insurer. But for the size of us, I would say we're very active in that space with a wide range of staff-led community to groups to support these. Examples of things like charity, wellbeing, climate action. We have Inspiring Colour Networks, Covea Pride's community, gender balance, accessibility, D&I and Covea Mind groups. We also support our staff with one day a year for any volunteering that they want to do, and it's at their choice for any charitable organisation and events that they want to do. And we do regular events throughout the year to support these, things like Ramadan, Eid, we have Pride Month, we have July as our wellbeing month where we do a lot of activities around that. We support things like International Women's Day, we support International Men's Day, we have Carers at Christmas. We also have a lot of small sessions that staff can dial into where we have guest speakers that can provide support and assistance or even just chat around some of these topics. So we're actually really quite supportive from that, and that extends comes to how we perceive and try to support our customers as well as our staff. So, you know, from our customers' perspective, we also partnered with DA Languages, and that's to support any non-English speaking customers. And we also paired up with Sign Life so that we could help communicate with any British Sign Language users. So we give our customers a variety of platforms and support and how they can interact with us.
Great. It sounds like there's a lot of great work going on there. And if I could also ask, how important is it to not just remain chartered, but also ensure that your staff are able to continue their qualifications journey?
It's very important to Kaveh. We are dedicated to the continuing professional development of our staff. We do that. We fully fund CI membership for our staff. We provide exam materials, the books, the exams for our staff, as well as provide the study leave time to help support them. We also use the CIISS modules, and that material also supports our staff pass the relevant exams as they continue through the different levels of their qualification. We publicise and celebrate every successful candidate when they pass their exams. We provide professional rewards to our staff and publicly acknowledge their success. So we like to celebrate the success and the qualifications. And we've also developed specific programmes aimed at helping staff achieve their professional qualifications. So it's not just about their work, it's about how they obtain those qualifications throughout their careers and how they can move through the layers and levels of qualifications. It's a continual support.
Yeah. What would you say is the importance of staff obtaining those qualifications?
It's very important. I think that's the market benchmark for testing knowledge. It's a core component of our technical knowledge and skills framework, our training programs. So it's very important. And we use that material to support that progress, not only through commercially, but through their careers.
Yeah, that's great. Richard, could we ask you the same question on that one?
Yeah, so obviously the firm becoming chartered, it's almost like the kind of, you know, you've got to hit these minimum thresholds. So we've got to get how many points to renew or to gain our corporate chartered status. But if we stop there, what would be the point of starting the learning in the first place? So we as a firm want to employ people who are curious and who want to develop. We don't want people who will do the bare minimum and then stop. Things change, the markets change, regulation changes, case law changes, and we need people to be equipped to move with those changes. So much like Debbie was saying, you know, we pay for CI membership, we pay for CI exams. We go a little bit beyond that. You know, the CI likes to stress that insurance brokers are going to have to take on a more risk management focused role. So we have people who undertake risk management qualifications. We've got people with loss adjusting qualifications and associated or allied skill sets to CII and insurance qualifications. We've had people go through senior leader degree apprenticeships. We've got people at the moment working through their certificate, their advanced diploma. And even when we first applied for charter status, I'd had my ACI for a couple of years, I think. And since then, I've done my fellowship as well. So we very much see it as a career-long journey, you know, that we should be learning all the time. And we're happy to pay for staff to do that and to give them the time to do the learning or time away from the office if it's a formal course.
Yeah, man, that's great. And you're a chartered insurance broker. Would you say that holding the individual chartered title helps with your role?
In some ways, no. In the sense that, you know, to become a chartered insurance broker, you need to have your advanced diploma. And that's where you kind of learn the knowledge, I suppose. The addition is, though, that you need, I think it's 5 years experience. And I guess it's the knowledge with the experience that helps you within your role. You can guarantee that once a year, someone on LinkedIn is going to post something and saying, would you rather employ somebody with experience or a qualification? And the reality is you can have somebody with both. And it really just reflects the benefits that I've gained through going through the process. The title itself isn't perhaps quite as useful. The flip side, though, is that there aren't many chartered insurance brokers. So if you were to think of it as a benefit, the key one would be differentiation. There aren't many of them out there, then you stand out from the crowd. If you were, you know, earlier in your career, or if you were employed, then having a chartered title would be much more useful. If you're maybe client facing, like an account exec or something like that, where you're selling yourself as much as the firm and the service that you're offering, again, that's going to be really, really useful. I don't know if that was quite maybe the answer you're looking for, but
know whatever you think is the right thing to say. There's no right or wrong answer. Any kind of insight is always valuable. Debbie, maybe we can ask you, what advice would you give to a firm that is looking to become chartered?
I would say to anyone who's looking to become chartered is, why wouldn't you do it? You know, as Richard said, it shouldn't be a differential. It should be you're putting yourself out there saying that we comply with a set of standards. We can guarantee that. It's a service that you can differentiate between your competitors. It gives your customers and your brokers the confidence that you do have that. You do comply with those ethics. You have the right knowledge and skill set. You have the professionalism. You provide the right level of service. You're giving that trust, which is effectively, at the end of the day, insurance is a service industry. It's all about service. It's all about trust. That should give your customers confidence. I also think the process and even just the application process in itself is actually quite beneficial. It's valuable because it gives you, as a business, the opportunity to objectively review everything that you think you do, everything that you are doing, and also by applying the set of standards that you can then look at, well, where are ways that we can improve on these, as well as, do we comply? Are we as good as we think we are? Or is there more areas to inform? So as an organisation, it helps you objectively look at the standards that you apply yourself against, and you can take it from there.
Yeah, definitely. Richard, is there anything that you would add on to that?
Not sure. I think, like Debbie said, it's like any accreditation that a firm goes for. It gives you the chance to sort of self-audit. So even if you didn't hit the minimum thresholds to become a chartered insurance broker or a chartered insurer, even understanding where you're at compared to those threshold requirements is useful. You know, it helps you if you really want to. Obviously, it helps you direct your activity towards filling the gaps. But it also, I always found with these things that it kind of reassures you where you have hit those requirements. It's reassurance that you are kind of on the right track, doing the right things. But yeah, I think in terms of advice, again, like Debbie, why wouldn't you? You know, we've got AI and machine learning and automation coming in. So particularly for brokers, how do we survive as society changes, their expectations change, and technology change as well? The only way is to be knowledgeable. You know, it's all about what's in your head. So learning is going to be key, and policies around supporting learning is going to be how brokers survive.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I don't know if there's any final thoughts that either of you would like to share on the value of chartered status for firms. Anything that we've missed that you would like to add on?
I think the only thing I would say, as a firm of chartered insurance brokers, we've been going for about 8 years, and it was only really after we became chartered that we really gained traction in terms of client acquisition. Now, it could just be that we've been established for 3 years at that point. And, you know, maybe 3 years is the magic number. But once we sort of publicly announced that we were chartered, the types of inquiries we got were very, very different. We don't usually talk about sort of money from our firm's perspective, but much higher value clients, much more interesting and complex clients as well. So our client book very much changed from sort of micro SMEs and micro charities to much bigger ones, or organizations with sort of multiple entities within it, which has been nice from a sort of cash flow point of view. But it's also been really interesting from a professional point of view, because I'm dealing with things that are far more interesting risks than I would otherwise be dealing with. So for us, it's been fantastic.
Great, that's really interesting. Debbie, is there anything that you would like to add?
Yeah, I guess from our standpoint, we've been chartered for a similar period of time as Richard has. And what we've found is that by one gaining this accreditation, it does make you take a good hard look at what you do, how you do it, how you're set up for the future. And it gives us a benchmark that not only do we make sure that we comply with and that we reach that, but we surpass that. So we strive to be better than that. And that's also helped us as an organization really formulate how we develop our staff, how we get our technical skills out there, how we deal with our customers. We have a benchmark and we try to surpass it in everything that we do. So it's been really helpful for us to be able to do that. And, you know, as Richard said, the market will change, society will change, and we need to change with that.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Those are really interesting insights to hear. And just, yeah, thank you both, Richard and Debbie, for joining me on the podcast today. It was great to have you along and get your views and hear about your experiences as chartered firms and the title. So thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Journal podcast. For more podcasts and useful links, please visit thejournal.cii.co.uk/podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.